I'd like to start essentially where you end the book, with the Tsarnaev brothers. You talk about how a family that, until April 2013, seemed to be the poster case for a successful immigration, and then suddenly they were something much different.
That was a very vexing situation, and President Obama himself admitted that it was hard for him to understand why two brothers who seemed to have been integrated into American society could turn out to have such hatred for people that they had grown up around. And it shows that you have to think deeply and thoughtfully and carefully about the challenge of integrating a diverse society. It's not an automatic thing. It's a challenging thing. One of the things that I found interesting in that case is that the conclusion to be drawn from it is not that people from, you know, Muslim backgrounds or other cultural backgrounds, Middle Eastern backgrounds or whatever, cannot be acculturated, because the people who sort of ended that situation were themselves immigrants. There was a man from China and a Muslim immigrant, I believe he was from Egypt, who played a very important role in ending that. So you're going to find immigrants who don't integrate successfully, harmoniously into this society, but you are going to find just as many and many times more immigrants from diverse backgrounds who become true, genuine, heroic Americans.
Mm-hmm. And the immigration policy as we know it today was shaped by the 1965 Immigration and Naturalization Act, which you center your book around. But that was a long time coming. It could kind of be traced back to the 1880s, and it wasn't till decades later that Senator Edward Kennedy and President Johnson had a bill that rejected the quota system we'd worked with for so long.
That's right, Amanda. I mean, back in the 19th century, this issue was debated. I found it fascinating to go back and read testimony from debates in the 19th century where you had some members of Congress, some legislators saying outlandish things about people of other colors and nationalities. And also you found people making a strong defense of the idea of America as a place that should not be characterized by prejudice. I mean, it's interesting that the same kind of debates that we have heard over and over go back that far. Now, the balance of opinion in the late 19th century and early 20th century was such that it justified exclusionary policies in immigration. That held true throughout the first half, more than the first half of the 20th century. There was a reaffirmation of the national origin quota system in 1952 with passage of the McCarran-Walter Act. President Truman was outraged by it. A lot of liberals in Congress were outraged by it. President Truman actually vetoed that act, but his veto was overridden with a two-thirds vote in Congress. So the numbers in Congress still at that point were on the side of restricting U.S. immigration policy. And John Kennedy, who was a member of Congress at that time representing Massachusetts, actually he was elected to the Senate in 1952, was one of those who pushed for elimination of the national origin quotas. Interestingly, he wasn't so much defending the right of Asians or Africans or Middle Easterners to come to the United States. He was more interested in Italians and Greeks and Poles who found themselves disadvantaged in the allocation of visas. Those were the constituencies he was most concerned about. Then he became president in 1960, introduced, took him a couple years, but he introduced a bill to change the immigration system. It wasn't until Lyndon Johnson was elected in 1964 with big, big majority in Congress, majorities that enacted the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and the Fair Housing Act. It was only then that this administration was able to bring about those long-sought changes in U.S. immigration policy.
And that really changed the face of who was coming to the U.S.
Dramatically. Dramatically. I mean, at the time that law was passed, one, we had a fairly low level of immigration to the United States. I think only fewer than 5% of the American population was foreign-born at that time. Now it's up around 14%. So the immigrant share of the population in overall terms has tripled. And in 1965, of those 5% who were born abroad, almost all of them were European. About 7 out of 8 immigrants at that time were coming from European countries. So that was largely just reinforcing the character of the country at the time. Now, 9 out of 10 new immigrants are coming from outside Europe. So not only has the quantity of immigration changed dramatically over the last 50 years, the nationalities represented by the new immigration pattern has shifted. The color, the complexion of America has changed. The color of the immigrant population has changed, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And I found it really interesting that how you noted that this has happened because of the current bias in our legislation toward immigrants who are joining immediate family members, yet that was implemented as a way to keep the United States largely Anglo-Saxon, and it completely backfired on them.
Exactly right. I think that's one of the most ironic aspects of this law. And, you know, there are a lot of people now that are saying, well, the 1965 Immigration Act was just a scheme to get, you know, new Democratic Party voters. And in fact, it has produced that because the great majority of immigrants, something like, you know, 80% of Asians, for example, vote Democratic. But the original version of that bill would not have rewarded family unification. It would not have rewarded people who already have relatives here. It was going to reward people with skills and training that were considered especially advantageous. And there were some people who thought that if you rewarded people who already had relatives here, you would just bring in more of the same, which was true for the first few years. But as immigrants from other national backgrounds got a foothold in this country, they were the ones that were most motivated to bring in relatives. It wasn't the Europeans who were coming in who were motivated to bring in relatives. It was people from Asia and Latin America and Africa and the Middle East. They were the ones, they were coming from regions where there was a real strong push to forces. The forces that were pushing people to migrate were stronger in those areas, so they were the ones who were most motivated to bring in their family members, and the family unification provisions of the 65 Act ultimately ended up reinforcing migration from those areas, not from Europe.
And so after the law, the rhetoric kind of died down for a while, but you said it looked like one of the groups that kind of reunited the debate was a contingent of environmentalists?
Yeah, well, if you know, you're too young to remember this, Amanda, I think. But in the environmental movement was a very, you know, the drive to control population was closely linked to the environment movement in the 60s. And you had this idea of the population explosion and the earth was going to be taken over by too many people. It wasn't today the big issue, the big environmental issue is climate change. In the 60s and 70s, the big environmental issue was population. And there was a question about whether any country could sustain its natural resources if population kept growing. And so, yes, it's true that some of the most outspoken advocates of immigration restriction were environmentalists in the 60s and 70s. And they thought the United States should limit immigration for the purpose of preserving the natural resources of this country. That has really changed. That's no longer the source of opposition to immigration. That's no longer the concern that motivates people that think we have too many immigrants coming in. But that's certainly the way it was in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And so we've talked about how the makeup of our country has changed a lot over the years. And throughout the book, as you talk about that, you look at different ways that people have tackled this question of Americanization and what it means. What do you think it's come to mean today?
Well, I think that, you know, the fact that so many of our immigrants are coming from non-European backgrounds, the fact that we have so many people coming from Asia who perhaps are coming from a Confucian or Buddhist or Hindu traditions as opposed to a Judeo-Christian tradition, the fact that Islam is one of the fastest growing religions, both in the United States and around the world, you know, that's bringing in Muslim immigrants whose background doesn't conform to the American idea. The notion of Americanization has had to incorporate these new challenges because clearly you can't any longer sort of restrict the idea of Americanism, if there is such a word, in the way that we could in the past. We have to be able to kind of come up with an idea of America, an idea of becoming American that allows for people of sort of non-traditional backgrounds. And I think that what you are seeing is more of an emphasis on political ideology. In other words, on the American identity being tied up with principles of the U.S. Constitution, individual rights, the ideas inherent in the Declaration of Independence, sort of a more of a civic understanding of the American identity as opposed to cultural or even religious identity. And along with that, a sort of a recognition that you can't force people to take on a culture that is not their own, that is sort of inconsistent with where they've come from. I mean, you can have Asian or African or Middle Eastern immigrants who are absolutely determined to become American as much as they can. They can't change their skin color. They can't change their religious background. They can't change their cultural history. Those are sort of immutable. So that fact has to be accommodated. But I think that there is a sense that there is a meaning to Americanization and the American identity that actually includes people who are coming from sort of non-traditional, non-European backgrounds. That's, to me, one of the most fascinating aspects of this story, is how this society is working its way towards that new understanding of what Americanization can actually mean.
Mm-hmm. And that relates to the title of your book, A Nation of Nations. You kind of leave us on the optimistic note that we're not quite there yet, but we are moving towards it. What do you think a true Nation of Nations would look like?
Well, A Nation of Nations is from a poem by Walt Whitman that was written in 1855, roughly. And he said, the United States is not merely a nation, but a teeming nation of nations. It was not at the time. It was not a nation of nations. It was largely a white European nation. There was a slave population at that time. There was a Native American population that was being basically annihilated. There were Chinese people coming in, but they were ostracized, and there was a lot of prejudice against them. So, you know, there was a contradiction with sort of this mythology of America being a nation of nations and the reality in which it was not. And it is only now in recent years that we've actually taken these steps to become a nation of nations. I personally think it's been largely an encouraging process, a process that shows that America is more resilient than some of us maybe had given it credit for being. I don't mean to underestimate or understate the difficulties that this has presented. There is continuing conflict and competition between, for example, immigrants who are willing to work for low wages and low-skilled native-born American workers who see these immigrants as competing with them for jobs. That's a real factor. You know, there are issues of acculturation, and the Tsarnaev brothers are a perfect example of that. So I don't mean to understate the challenges that this change in our immigration patterns has presented, but by and large, I think it's been an experience 50 years that has shown that America does have the capacity to incorporate people of different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for your time and your incredibly interesting book.
Thank you for showing interest in it, Amanda.